review. I don't know whether we agree that that's the right version number, but I guess that's up for discussion and debate as well. It feels like last year, doesn't it, John? Last meeting in Delhi, we had a very brief informal chat with a couple of registrar, and we felt it might be worthwhile actually sitting down face-to-face and having something slightly more formal, particularly because we struggle on the demand side in a multilingual and culturally and linguistically diverse area to ensure that our people have the right message. And it's in everybody's best interests that supply and demand understand each other. And particularly, it's very easy when we're told... Nick, can you clarify here, when are we actually getting the translations ready or able, perhaps ready to allow our communities to even look at your most recent documentation?
I made a request. Well, a request was made to me, and I have passed it on, that the original RAA and then the amendments that were just posted that are proposed for the public to comment on be translated, because we have a number of, well, a sizable proportion of our community is not sufficiently good in English to read legal texts. The services team have no issue with this, and I'm working with the legal department now on what would be a suitable disclaimer so that everyone is aware that this is not intended for use in a court or for any legal proceeding, but is meant for people to be able to understand and comment within the ICANN community. So I don't have an ETA on the documents at this time.
But it's clearly a mismatch of when it needs to be done and get out to the community and when we are able to do it. In fact, when we looked at a flow chart through the week on how long it takes, if you include proper translation on everything, from go to woe on a policy document, I believe it was, 11.5 weeks, which is absolutely ridiculous. Nobody could expect, you know, we have to do a whole lot better than that. Just to start off this morning, because we probably don't know all the... I do apologise. Know each other all that well. I want to make firstly an announcement. Sorry. Firstly, an announcement that the person who should have been chairing from the at-large advisory committee's side of things, which is Bo Brendler, we have either working group leaders or liaisons, because they're the ones whose focus on the particular area of expertise, and he's in the RAA working group. He is unable to join us today. He had a death in the family and had to fly out to Bristol last night. It's actually the death of his mother, so it's one of those things you've just got to do. So I'm going to stumble through co-chairing with, I assume, you.
Good.
And perhaps we should do a quick round robin. You know who I am. Which end do you want to start with? Hello, my name is, and I am from. Perhaps Jose.
Good morning. My name is Jose Salgueiro. I am from Venezuela, and I'm a RELO member from Latin America, representing Alpha Ready.
Good morning. Carlos Aguirre, ALAC by LAC RELO, from Argentina.
Good morning. My name is Mason Cole. I'm from Oversea in the United States, and I'm Secretary of the Registrar's Constituency.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Vine. I'm from Register.com.
Morning. My name is Evan Leibovich. I am chair of the North American region for At Large.
I'm Darcy Enyart from Dotster.
Izumia Izum from AP Rallo ALAC.
Jacqueline Morris, ALAC liaison to the CCNSO from Trinidad and Tobago.
Fatima Da Silva from Senegal, ALAC.
John Nevitt from Network Solutions, and I'm chair of the Registrar Constituency.
Nick Ashton-Hart with the staff of ICANN.
Frederick De Boul, ICANN staff.
Vandis Cartesini, ALAC, vice chair from Brazil.
Alan Greenberg, non-com appointee to the ALAC from North America.
Adrian Kinderis, Oz Registry Group,
registrar constituency and representative to the JNSO Council.
Tim Ruiz, GoDaddy.com, registrar's constituency and representative on the JNSO Council.
Tim Cole, Chief Registrar Liaison for ICANN.
I'm Michael Machado, representing Brazilian Registrar and also a member of the Registrar Constituents.
Lutz Donnerhacke from Euralo.
I'm Hong Xue, IDN Liaison at ALAC from China.
I'm Eric Brunner-Williams, CORE in Switzerland.
We could clarify that, Nick, you work in support of ALAC, right? I mean, there's a different distinction here, some of our jobs, so.
Yeah, there certainly is, and I should point out that Frederick and wherever Matthias is also support the ALAC as well. We really only have two, and I don't think a short meeting should have more than two, preferably actually one, item on the agendas this morning, and the first one is something we'd like to get a measure of your reaction from, and that is the proposal that the at-large community has on its summit proposal for Probably Cairo. It's a significant request on expenditure from the ICANN perspective. Clearly, constituencies all need to support or otherwise, and we wanted the opportunity for you to question us or have clarified any particular points about the ALAC summit. We are running a working group. Please just remind me when today, 11 o'clock or something, is it, Evan?
11 o'clock in this room.
Okay. And there will be a full presentation on that, so perhaps if one of you is available, you might be able to take the completely detailed information back to the rest of your constituency. Of course, we see that as the original source of funds, registrant-derived funds funnel up from the consumer, which is why working between supply and demand is so important, because we need the best deal, and that means you need the cleanest and most cost-effective working environment. Otherwise, it all just comes back to us anyway. We really wanted to give you the opportunity to ask us any questions about what on earth this summit is all about. Yes, go ahead, Tim.
It would be great if you could give an overview of what the plans are, and I don't want the full details that you're going to present at 11, but just the high-level goals and timeline milestones, that kind of thing. I guess, Evan, that would be great if you could do that.
Yeah, Evan, if you do that, and then, Tim, I'll take your question, Nick.
I'd like to go first, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because I just want to be clear, you know, in regards to my participation or GoDaddy.com's participation in the meeting, and that it's any interest in our discussions of these natures to us is predicated on the outcome of the GNSO improvements. That's very key to us. So, you know, listening and information is fine, but any participation or any positions taken by the registrars at this point, I think, should be looked at as on an individual basis and not as a whole.
Okay, I'm not totally sure how that affects what I was going to say. The basics of the summit is that it would start 2 days before the regular ICANN meeting. 2 days that would essentially involve ALSs from around the world to engage in policy development, to find out from each other what are the various regional priorities in terms of ICANN issues, and the outcomes are very heavily policy-oriented in terms of making sure that the ALSs, not just at the high level of ALAC and secretariats, but at the grassroots level as well, they're expected to come into the summit informed, and they're expected to leave the summit with some idea of the way that we are going to be making policy. So the intent of the summit is to be very, very policy-oriented in terms of the education, in terms of the meetings, bringing a regional perspective to the issues and bringing the issues-based perspective to the various regional interests.
Okay. Any questions for Evan? How many people do you expect?
We could have as many as about 120 ALSs, but what's more highly likely is that it'll be a somewhat smaller number than that. Because this is not intended to be a free ride, ALSs are expected to come in informed, so we hit the ground running. And so ALSs that haven't demonstrated an interest in participation and education will not be participating. So we have a high and a low. Well, the low is zero, and the high is 120. It's not likely to be at either extreme. So far, we've been sending surveys out to ALSs. We've received a good amount of response, but everyone has also been informed that anyone that does not respond to our queries, anyone who does not demonstrate the information, won't be coming.
If you would care to, and I'll just see if Nick can ensure that the URL is brought up for where you can find the summit documentation on our wiki, in the hard, cold cash part of it at the back of this document. This is the specific document that the board is looking at this week. We did a 60 and 80 people projection because, you know, to be honest, A, we've set high standards. B, any time you have a meeting, not everybody turns up. Recognising, of course, that we would be replacing the existing meetings that we already have on the Saturday and the Sunday, so it's not an and. Yes, Eric.
Evan, you said that it's going to be very policy-oriented. I can't stay for the entire meeting. I've got to go to the IDN working group that starts at half an hour. I encourage you to communicate to the participants the need for information about characters which are not present in Unicode. So just to take 1 minute, we found one character that's present in Unicode in the Arabic script working block, which is incorrectly characterized for the Iowa script, which is how Malay is written in the Arabic script. That was in the Arabic script working group that met earlier in this session. Informally, we found several characters in several West African languages which are not present. So I appreciate that this is a policy-oriented meeting, but if there can be any technical or non-policy input from local expertise, that is from people who use languages other than English, that would be greatly appreciated. It's not often that we get a group like this of I think that's all I need to say. Thank you.
If I may, Evan's in charge of the logistics subgroup, the working group. I'll ensure that Wolf is aware of that because he's doing content, because that would be well worthwhile. It's a rare opportunity, as you say, to have all those people there. Thank you.
I've got something small to add to that. If this is to take place in Cairo, and right now it's sort of we're unsure whether this is going to take place in Cairo or at the following meeting, which we anticipate might be in Mexico. That will be, I think, based on cost. But if it takes place at Cairo, we already have a number of communications with local groups within Cairo who will be present and participating with us at the summit as well. So it's our goal to have a local grassroots as well as bringing together the global group.
Arabic's done. Arabic scripts, which is more than Arabic, is not done. There's a lot of Africa that's not done. So I was looking for something other than local groups in Cairo that would be asking like local groups in North America, except for Indians, I guess. I could fill up an entire time slot on that. So that wasn't the answer I was looking for, Evan. But if you'll take the action item, thank you very much.
I will. And do you mind if Wolf gets back to you for specifics? Thank you. I just don't want it to end up misinterpreted because I think it's important to follow on. Any other questions?
The budget document, that was linked in some document, right? It was in the budget itself, right?
Yes, there was a placeholder amount in the budget, which is what the board resolved to allow for everybody to generally work in an area, whilst we then worked with staff between our Delhi meeting and this meeting to get actual costs of the rooms. For example, just the taxes in Egypt are pretty impressive. So we've worked on real figures, not projections. And so these are cold, hard figures this time round.
What was the total?
Nick, are you able to bring up the document so we can share? Okay. That's all right. We can't get into multitask. What I'd like to do is show you, but as it is right now, we'll read out loud. At the moment, it comes in with a 491,540.71.
It went down.
So we've worked very hard to ensure that we have culled it to its barest minimum. And in fact, we're still hoping to reduce that, particularly because the way we've set up the costing model, which when you look at the spreadsheet you'll be able to analyse yourselves, works on blocks of per 10 people per room. Right? And with blocks of per 10 people per room, the breakout sessions, for example, the costings here have us breaking out into five separate rooms. Well, of course, we have interpretation requirements. Excuse me, ladies. Thank you. We have interpretation requirements, and we would be stupid to be breaking down and moving those to do a breakout session. So if we've got interpretation booths in one large assembly room, we'll probably be doing two or three of those breakout sessions in parts of that one large assembly room. So, again, there's an opportunity for cost reduction even further than that.
Great. Any other questions about the proposed ALAC meeting in either Cairo or Mexico City? Sounds like what's the cause of the change? Is it just cost, perhaps, between Cairo and Mexico City?
I honestly don't know. This is just what's been coming back to me. We're comfortable working with either.
And our resolution was if this was to happen, it needed to happen in this fiscal year because our ALSs need to be all on the same starting point. We have to get the on-the-ground at large people up to date. Yes, Adrian.
Is there a thought to maximising participation between the two venues? Would Cairo attract more people or would Mexico attract more people? And if so, is that worth consideration?
Go ahead, Sebastian.
Sebastian Bachelet, sorry to be late. I think we face something quite interesting here, is that we are more driven by money than politics. Because to answer your question, it's that we, as ALAC, what we want to do is to have all our LSEs joining in a meeting. To be frank, to be sure to have 100 LSEs coming, it would have been better to do it here. It's not because it's my city. It's because it will be. It's attract more people. We show it during these 5 days. Then, if you are just driving by money, then maybe it will be in Mexico than in Cairo. But for the reasoning you have, I don't know which city to do now in the next fiscal year. But we hope to have as much as possible people, and I don't think that at the end of the day we will have a big differences if it's Cairo or Mexico. It's more we need to convince and to attract our LSEs to come to any of those two meetings if possible. I just want to be sure that because when somebody says somebody to somebody who says somebody, I guess I was the one who told some people about Mexico. Just to give you, to give us, yeah, I am the one. Just to give you this, because I discussed with some board members about, or they told me about that. Then I wanted to be sure that the community and at least the ALAC member and secretary could be aware of that because it could change a little bit our objective and what we are waiting from the board to decide. Then there is no resolution either from Cairo or from Mexico, from what I know, but it's something different because ALAC decided to have this within this year and the board decided that it could be done in this fiscal year. And the only crossover time was Cairo. Then we were working on Cairo. That's the reasoning under that. But really our goal is to have as much as possible representative from each LSE's member of our RELOs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian. I have Alan and then I have Eric.
The gestation period for this meeting is rather long. We originally, I think, talked about having it in Los Angeles, and it's been changed, San Juan, I'm sorry, and it's been changed clearly a number of times. I'm not convinced there's a big difference in cost between the two cities. There may be a little bit cheaper in Mexico City. Visas may be different in each of them, and I don't know which one wins. From my perspective, if the board approves this soon and Mexico City gives us a longer time of a guaranteed firm meeting that we can talk about with all the ALSs, it probably increases the number of people attending and the quality of it, just because at this point we can't really do anything because it's still an if. So that may be a minor benefit and or maybe a major one. It remains to be seen. But at this time it's floating around out of our control.
Eric.
What is the principal or the largest cost element that's variable? Is it airfares? Is it lodging, hotels? Are there non-cost barriers such as visas which are required in one, you know, for what is the, what are the variables that we're actually twiddling here other than time and notice and delay?
Well, interestingly enough, if I may, the standard costs on airfare per meeting and accommodation per meeting don't actually change greatly at all. According to what ICANN staff have plugged into our equations. I'll ask them to clarify that if I've misinterpreted or misquoted them. What does make a difference, of course, is some countries getting visas into other countries and also transit issues. There's no particular analysis that we've done on Mexico versus Cairo, because up until this meeting, and now I know who to blame, Sebastian, we weren't contemplating Mexico. So that's something that we'll certainly have to do if that's the outcome. I guess the most important thing, one of the tangible reasons, if I can put my teeth back in, that I think the Cairo opportunity is a golden one, is the 10-year anniversary. And if you're looking at proving to the world that you have a grassroots-based, multi-stakeholder, multidisciplinary model holding a general assembly of potentially up to 120 at-large structures from the five regions of the world, it's not a bad PR exercise. Nick, did you want to say something, or did you just move up because you like to sit next to me?
No, I just came back from breakfast.
Okay, fine. Yes, Sebastian.
I agree totally with what you say. Cheryl, it's once again when money drives and not politics drives. And I hope that you have other reason to blame me. Thank you very much.
If there's no other questions on this matter, we note the ticking over of the half hour and probably would like to move on to the media part of the discussion if that's with everybody's permission. Oh, great, we get the document up now. Perfectly timed. When you do look at the URL, if you can look at the URL, if you just go to the ICANN wiki, that's the actual document. If you go to the ICANN wiki, what we'll do, we'll make sure there'll be a slide up on our presentation, which is just the URL for the documentation. But if you follow anything that says at large, off the ICANN site. Once you get to the at-large wiki site, just put summit into the search mechanisms and you'll end up on the right page. Advertising. Advertise. Go ahead, Evan.
Oh, definitely. If you come to the session, the very last slide has the URL in extremely big type. And also we'll be putting up a spreadsheet with any numbers that'll go into some somewhat more excruciating detail.
Yes, and the numbers are always excruciating. Nick just said we'll ensure it gets sent around, so John, I'll make sure you get the URL so you can distribute it. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Stay with us?
Only just. I trust that most of you know that the ALAC put in an analysis for Section F of the RAA, and being ill-equipped as I am, not being a lead or particularly well-versed in this area. Well, that's what it says on my document. So it was a previous.
Work with it.
I'm working not only with it, but without wires and without a net. One of the things that I think is terribly important is that some of the statements that we made in that particular document looked at enhanced opportunities for consumer and registrant protection. Now, obviously, that's in your best interests as well. I'd really like to look at the fresh view, and Jonathan, if I can toss to you, what do you think we need to know about the current RIA documentation? So we can take it pre-translations back to our people, because right here you've got the representatives from the five regions who can reach out and actually correctly educate the ALSs.
Are you asking about the current RAA or the current amendments that are...
Amendments.
Amendments, okay.
So, educators.
Education for our ALSs could be also on the current document. Or the amendment, it's what it's on the table, and then it's better to discuss that now. But to let you know that we will be happy, I am sure, to learn more about those agreements in general for our members. They need to learn.
Just so everybody knows, Tim has already offered to hold a telephonic briefing like the last two on this subject. He offered to do a briefing while we were all here, but there was just no available meeting time left. I'll work with him to try and find a good time when a telephonic briefing can be held, at which it must be said any registrars who wish to participate in the discussion are entirely welcome.
I should also add that Tim did hold a briefing on this topic. When was it? A couple days ago. Sometime in this meeting, the last few days.
We were locked in another room, weren't we?
I've held several briefings this week on this for different groups, and we did have a protection of registrants workshop this week earlier on Monday. I could just briefly list some of the changes. We put the all of this is on the website, by the way. There are both summary documents as well as the full contract language that has been arrived at through consultation. We, as you may have heard Paul Toomey say it more than once this week, these are not ICANN staff recommended changes to the contract so much as they are a set of changes that have evolved out of a dialogue both with the registrars and with the community input, and that they are now posted for another round of public comment. But having said that, there is also a strong desire, if at all possible, to move the amendments together as a block rather than go back one more time and start trying to tweak individual ones. Because, as you can imagine, anything this complex and this time-consuming, because we've actually been working on this for at least a year and a half, starts to unravel if you start to pull at the little individual threads. Having said that, we have been describing the changes in four broad categories. One is enforcement tools, and basically there are several changes in that category that involve providing enhanced ability to ensure compliance with ICANN policy and the contract itself. There's another category that we call registrant protections, and those focus in on a couple things that came out of this group, including what we call a rights and responsibilities page that would be developed in consultation with this group, with the registrars and others, interested parties in the community, that would develop a page on the ICANN website that details a registrant's rights and their responsibilities. So within the context of the ICANN contracted agreement with the registrars, and that such a page, once developed, all registrars would be that have websites would be obligated to put a link to that page on their own website. So this is one of the educational tools that I know was strongly advocated by this group. We also have for the first time we recognize resellers as a subset that registrars often do business with, and so we have some provisions in this that direct registrars who contract with resellers to include certain clauses in their contracting arrangements that would hopefully further enhance reseller knowledge and responsibility for complying with ICANN policies and so forth. We also have in that same category both registrar and resellers, if they in the process of selling a registration, if they offer a privacy or proxy service, they are also either obligated to escrow as part of the data escrow requirement the underlying customer data, or alternatively to inform the customer that it will not be escrowed. So again, we're talking about more informed consumers. It would be our wish at ICANN that all data be escrowed, so that if we end up in a business failure or something, that there is a way to connect the domain name back to the party who benefits from that registration. But at the same time, we also recognize the need to allow for a variety of business models. Competition in this marketplace is important, and if a customer chooses to register with someone who isn't escrowing their underlying privacy data, then that's a choice they're making knowledgeably, so that these provisions provide for that. So those are the basic protection, and the enforcement provisions include some graduated sanctions, which have been recommended across the board by a variety of people, so that we don't have simply the termination of the contract as the only option. If people have looked at any of these changes and studied them and have specific questions about the language or the wording in any of them, I'd be glad to address it, but I'm just trying to give you a high-level brief overview here.
Thanks. The other two categories that are included are promotion of a stable and competitive marketplace and agreement modernization. Just bringing the agreement to 2008 versus 2001, where the last draft was finalized. So Tim's point is a good one and an important one, in that it took us almost a year and a half to get here with a complex system of proposed amendments. So if the discussion in the policy development process on the registry contracts, which actually went nowhere because we ended up looking at individual provisions, is any guide, we should look at this as a community, as a package, and do an up or down vote on the package. Because, again, if we start with one provision at a time, it will take probably another 3 to 5 years. So I think we're all better off. We get this behind us. We get ICANN to have increased enforcement of contractual requirements and more tools to take action against registrars that are not acting in the best interests of their customers or violating their agreements. And you all, as representatives of the user community, would have more protections in the contract, and then we modernize it as well. So as a package, we're, are we happy with this? Probably not. Could it be better from our perspective? Yes. Could it be better from ICANN's perspective? Yes. Could it be better from the user group's perspective? Probably yes.
It's a compromise.
But exactly. This is a series of discussions, and at least there's a comfort level with this package that we have here, and something that we think we can move forward with together. And so if anyone has any specific questions about the proposed agreement or any of the provisions, feel free to bring them up. Yes, please.
Thank you. This is me. I don't know how significant it is for you or even for us, but we in Japan had some interesting discussion with the registrars about the data escrow program. Is it part of the amendment, I believe, right? For those who are not familiar with the concerns are about twofold. One is that you have to choose either your own third-party escrow service, or if you cannot find the ICANN has prepared Iron Mountains in the U.S., am I correct? And the concern is that one is that, and I believe almost most of the Japanese registrars couldn't so far set up any third-party one in Japan, so that, and by the deadline imposed was May, I think, that they had to send all the customer data in escrow into the U.S. Iron Mountains, which, unless you make some special arrangement, may breach the personal data protection law in Japan. And also, there's some concern about national interest, whether having the U.S. citizens' data to the third country, such as the U.S., and which law will apply to what. We haven't really concluded that study, but I actually initiated under a different hat, but Internet Association of Japan, where I'm the chair of the international activities and government people, two ministries people and several registrars and others, and even the .jpcc guys came to discuss about this. So whether you are aware of similar cases or you any sort of idea will be very welcome.
I'll respond quickly and then put it over to Tim to talk from the ICANN perspective. From the contract perspective, the escrow relationship is already in the agreement. It's not one of these amendments. So that it doesn't change that requirement that all registrars must escrow data, and that the fact that ICANN set it up with a system that if you pick the ICANN selected provider, we had a choice between the ICANN selected provider or have another provider come and get ICANN approval, and then you could do it through them. But I'll push it over to Tim.
Izumi, I apologize because I do not know the specifics with regard to Iron Mountain in Japan. I do know that Iron Mountain is a signatory on the I'm trying to think of the term, the safe harbor provision in Europe. So they are eligible to under European privacy laws to protect they're eligible to do business in Europe even under the European privacy laws. They're the largest company of their kind in the world. So my suspicion is that if there is a similar arrangement with Japan, I'm fairly certain they probably have entered into it. But again, Krista Papik, who is in attendance at this meeting, would be in a better position to answer this question. And I'm afraid she's not here this morning. But so I don't want to say categorically one way or the other, but my strong assumption is that they probably have made some sort of arrangement already with Japan, if that is possible.
I haven't checked out, but some of the government officials relatively familiar with this intellectual property and escrow field said it's not the case yet, perhaps, but I'm not too sure. Do you have any ballpark figures, ideas on how your escrow being established with your third party versus Iron Mountain, or are they, well, of the 900 registrars, I don't know how much are, but you have any idea?
Of the 900 registrars, only two of them owned by the same company have requested a third party. Everyone else has requested Iron Mountain so far. And unfortunately, Mike Zupke had to step out for a minute, but he is actually running the RDE program and has all of the data at the tip of his tongue. But somewhere in the neighborhood of 82% of all domain registrations are already being deposited with Iron Mountain. Now, of course, that's not 82% of the registrars, but all of the large registrars are already participating, and therefore a disproportionate or a higher percentage of the total registrations are actually already being escrowed. The other thing that I will point out, and it is, of course, this data escrow requirement has been part of the contract that every registrar has signed since 2001. So it was only in the last year that we've, you know, formally started to implement it. And I realize that in some ways that has been a short deadline for some people to come into agreement with. And we have been, I think, particularly generous at granting extensions where they appear to be justified. But as you can imagine, and as this group I'm sure is well aware, it's a much more desirable place for us to be to have everyone's data protected this way than it would be to not have it at all. So while I recognize there are some hardship situations, it's really, you know, in everyone's best interest to get this done as quickly as possible.
Just quickly, the Japanese are thinking to establish the national sort of escrow, perhaps, with, as I said, with a .jp, with the CCTLD to share the cost and lower the cost as well.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that. Any other questions about the RAA or any of the amendments that are being proposed here? Okay, I mean, one thing that we will need to work on together is that we have, assuming this goes through, as Tim mentioned, there's a requirement that registrars link to a registrant protection policy, for lack of a better term, just rights and responsibilities, I guess, for registrants. And that would be something that we look forward to working with you all on and getting that finalized as soon as possible after the approval and the adoption of this. And that way we could get that up posted on our websites, you know, for your users and your our users and our customers as long as possible.
I'd just like to augment that. In particular, in our registrar constituency meeting the other day, my colleague from Brazil here, Michelle, asked about how many different languages would this page be in, and we're also talking. Another item on here that I did not mention as I summarized is that there's also a training requirement for all registrars that will be an online training program as well with regard to ICANN policies and maybe some technical aspects. So, but both of those we will be looking at more than just English to the extent possible. So we would also welcome input. It's probably going to be governed by ICANN's translation policy, not by a choice that I make. But nevertheless, we'd welcome input in terms of both content and then languages.
Although what we need to realize is within the RALO and at-large structures layer, there's enormous possibilities for just local translation as long as it can be checked by your side of the equation to make sure what they've done is actually accurate. You know, we could actually get some local outreach possibilities, but we'd need to be able to have them authoritatively checked. I know that's sort of sliding it slightly around the back way, but our interest is to make sure you've got well-informed and properly informed customers making consent. I'm really excited about the possibilities of moving on to getting a registrant, options of, let me put my mouth into order, both the responsibilities in this as well. We also find that we've had a chat, and I'm surprised Anetta is not here, but sort of DNS and names for dummies, and this would possibly feed very much into that type of baseline information that we really need our people to understand. It's basically most of them neither know nor care about the subtle differences between a CCTLD, a GTLD, or whatever. And that's only when things go wrong they tend to complain about it. So if we can be forearmed and force a little bit of compliance in the registrant's side so that they are ticking off that they are informed and are consenting, it will make a big difference. Thank you, Evan.
One of the challenges that we have within at large is that we are almost by design don't have a lot of professional policy wonks involved, and we have a challenge of trying to put things not only into plain language in English, but into plain language in multiple languages. So, you know, one of our challenges is coming up with something like an RAA for Dummies document. One of the things that has come up, at least from people within some of our ALSs, is a question of accuracy of data as opposed to confidentiality of data. And I just wanted to find out if there are any perspectives here on the issue of how do you, you know, going along with the fact that there's options for escrow and so on, but along with that, what actions are being taken to ensure that the data, whether it's public or escrowed, is actually accurate?
I think those two concepts are intimately intertwined. The more public data is, it seems, the less accurate it often is. If you have to post your personal home phone number and street address when you register a domain name because it has to be accurate, that may make you think twice before you want to register a name, or else it may cause you to want to take a privacy service or something like that. So that's just my first, just a broad observation, but nevertheless, our compliance department has done extensive work, and you can read quite a bit about it in the compliance newsletter and on our website. It has undertaken significant efforts in pursuing WHOIS data accuracy issues. But we have also identified people that are using, we have a system for reporting inaccurate WHOIS information, and there has been a fairly large concern about a fairly large number of inappropriate, quote-unquote inappropriate, but at least complaints about data inaccuracy that aren't really based on inaccurate, the fact that the data is inaccurate so much as they're based on the fact that the person believes that the domain name is registered to somebody who's sending spam or something like that. So so we have a dual effort underway to review both the data, the accuracy of these complaints, but also and to assure that registrars take them seriously and do what they're obligated to do under the contract, which is to investigate complaints. But at the same time, it's somewhat counterproductive to send registrars thousands of complaints that aren't actually data accuracy complaints. Then the real accuracy issues get lost in the large numbers. But I'm not sure if that addresses your question or what your question actually is driven by. So,
just don't know if there's a matter of contractual things or if it's best practices that's being discussed within the constituency. Just trying to get any information about what's happening.
Certainly, as a package, we're looking at these RAA amendments, and we're talking to ICANN, and I think the key is enforcement. There are existing rules and responsibilities that that registrars have that ICANN needs to enforce. So to the extent they're looking at spending, I think it was another $2 million in enforcement and compliance efforts this budget year, there are registrars that are supportive of that and discussions around that in the budget discussions. To the extent they have more tools to go after registrars that aren't complying with the rules regarding WHOIS accuracy and all the other requirements in the RAA, they'll have more arrows in their quiver to come after bad acting registrars.
Cheryl, I know we're running out of time here, but so I wanted to make one comment before we finish, and not that this is the last comment, but I did want to mention that while both John and I have talked about the year and a half process and the challenges and so forth, this has probably been one of the most collaborative undertakings, especially when you consider a contract of this complexity and so forth. Both with regard to my discussions with this group, with the intellectual property constituency, with the registrars, and I am very impressed with what we've come out with, and with the strong the strong feeling on the part of the registrars that compliance is as important to them as it is to the rest of the world. As you can understand, in a very competitive marketplace that is driven by competition, if your competitors are doing something that isn't allowed and they're getting away with it, that puts you at a disadvantage. So
I just want to commend John and the constituency for their strong support for some issues that perhaps a couple years ago no one would have thought the registrars would be up, you know, right up front on, I mean, pushing for. But I think this has been a really positive development.
Thanks for that. And I must say, registrants want to work with best practice registrars. Our trouble is working out who's who. And this, I think, is going to go a long way towards allowing us to do that if we're properly informed. I was using the royal we there, of course. I'd always prefer to start something on time and finish even early. But having started 5 minutes late, I'm going to say, is there any last comments? And if not, I'd like to thank you all very much for your time and energies at such an awful hour of the morning, especially at this end of the week where I'm sure you're all as exhausted as we are. With no food, exactly. I said I'd bring my croissant. I should have bought a basket of them. One thing we must look towards future meeting plannings is it is distressing to the at-large community to not have been able to be in the briefings you were doing. This conflict in calendar or schedule, particularly with what I still think is a very much short version. I know we were told yesterday when Christus Mayne got up, no, you hardly lost anything by finishing on the Friday morning, the Thursday. It seems to me that we should be able to ensure that our at-large community are at the briefings that you're running. So any words in the right ear for future planning to make sure we don't get what is clearly important points of interest clashing, I think would be well worthwhile from both sides. Thank you all, and I hope this is just the beginning of a very interesting future supply and demand balance towards best outcomes for all. Thank you.
For the ALAC, just an informal announcement, if I may. The informal open meeting amongst the Board Governance Committee's Working Group on ALAC Review and anybody who wants to is going to start at 10 o'clock somewhere in the hallway. they're looking for some space, but if you are interested in the work of how to commence or proceed on the ACLASH review, it's fairly a good opportunity.
Can we get a clue on what floor the hallway is on?
The ground floor, near the exhibition space or somewhere down there.
Yes, it was sort of at the back of the exhibition space. I think it was vaguely at that.
I think near the Jacob Room, okay. The end of that hallway, but right. I'm not certain.
And
Jacob.
Yeah. If anyone fails to remember, and anybody on the ALAC side should definitely be here, this room, 11 o'clock, it's our meeting on the At-Large Summit proposal.